Good evening. We have a couple of new faces here tonight. This is Sophia. Leah. Sophia's sister. See, it is a flashback. As your sister sat here at just your age, only she fell asleep. And you did not. And we have a visitor here. Sharon, welcome. She's your friend, Samia? You are friends now, eh? How did you hear about us?
The web. I'm searching for a spiritual home, and Buddhism intrigues me.
Well, welcome. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Ellie.
Britt.
Sharon. Samia.
Ron.
Wendy.
And Donald Ann.
Leah.
There you go.
Good.
And Angie.
Yes. So we're studying this book, which is called the Lankavatara Sutra, a very ancient work. That purports to be coming out of Sri Lanka, a teaching of the Buddha to a young monk called Mahamati, who asks a jillion questions. And Buddha very eagerly answers all the questions, one by one by one, and there are many. So we're about more than halfway through, I think. I do believe we're on page 163 or so. So the basic premise is that there really is no fixed permanent self anywhere. Nothing is fixed and permanent, including us. That our body, our mind, are in constant shifting change. And so there's our understanding of ourself is often skewed by the projections that we put out there, as if there weren't out there, although what we're experiencing is our mind. So we can call it a book or a table or a chair, but it's only provisionally a book or a table or a chair because it is in that shape right now, as are we, but only for a while. It's all just only for a while. And so we project our understanding of chairs in a very fixed way. We've given each object or dharma a fixed character based on its name. And once we know the name of it, especially if we see it written down in the newspaper, and we can say, oh, well, it was written down in the paper, so it must be true. That's it. And our mind is just loose in that way. So this is a continual suggestion, turning around the whole subject, around and around, to see how utterly selfless, fixedly selfless, anything is, including us, and how we're made as different aspects of body and mind. And that if we are able to deeply study our mind and our body, we begin to understand that the world around us is very different from the way we characterize it and experience it based on our fear of not knowing. Our fear of, if we did realize that it was not self, and that ultimately we're not self, then it's disturbing. And so we easily create stories about ourself and our life, and we easily enjoy our projections, and including creating wars around our projections. Who's on the right side? Who has the best? Who God loves the most? Or something like that. It's all mind tricks. It's the way our mind is working when it's unobserved and not conscious. So our work is to become conscious and aware, to be knowing when we're projecting. And once we're knowing in that way, once we have that kind of understanding, the whole of the story making, the insecure story making, becomes very secure and easy. So that the eighth consciousness, they say, which is a big barn full of all everything that we've ever learned, ever known, ever seen or heard, which we think of as just the trash that goes on in our head all the time, actually is filled with light and love. That the true nature of us can be experienced. The more sincerely we work on being honest with ourselves and knowing ourselves best as we possibly can, which means the good parts and the not-so-good parts, the smart parts and the stupid parts. We like to leave all of those stupid parts out and just put forth a very perfect kind of person. But actually, we're not. Nobody is. And once we are able to admit our own foolishness, we can see other people's foolishness and see how they suffer from it, just as we suffer from it. And knowing in that way, we can be free of it. We can see it and be free of it. So this part is talking about types of projection. All based on realms that have no self-existence. So once we understand that we're projecting, they don't come up anymore. And when they don't come up anymore, that's knowing in the Buddha way. It's very simple, very plain. It's not fancy. But it's joyous, a joyous relief, just to be what we are, who we are and where we are, and feel how that is everywhere we go, everyone we meet. So, I love all these Roman numerals. I haven't had those since high school. So on 163, the Buddha says, the teaching known and passed down by the sages of the past is that projections are non-existent, and that bodhisattvas should dwell alone in a quiet place and examine their own awareness. By relying on nothing else and avoiding views and projections, they steadily advance to the Tathagata stage. This is what characterizes the personal realization of Buddha knowledge. And then he says, there's one path to realization. It means projections as projections of what grasps or what is grasped do not arise in suchness with a quiet mind. The one path to realization is beyond the reach of followers of other paths or Shravakas or Pratyeka Buddhas or even Brahma, but not Tathagatas. This is why I speak of one path. So Mahamati, always ready to challenge, says, but why do you teach three paths then and not teach one path? So Buddha says, I don't teach one path because there are different kinds of people. And so I teach a provisional, temporary three paths, recognizing the different kinds of people there are and knowing that basically they are just one path, that the Tathagata is just the one thing. But Some teach themselves and don't have a teacher, and others have a teacher but don't go far enough to drop the self. The self belief in a self, the story of a self. And so they're a little bit behind. It's when you can drop the story of the self and the constant building of a story of a self that the one path becomes obvious. It's what we've been on all along. So on one page 161. I do need more light. So the basic message in all of this is, as long as the mind keeps turning, these paths never end. When the mind finally ceases, there is no path or one who walks it. As long as the mind keeps turning, these paths never end. When the mind finally ceases, there is no path or one who walks it. So, there's a wonderful thing in the Huineng's teaching about being caught up in a sutra and attached to it, clinging to it. And he says, it's turning you. It's just turning your mind constantly. It owns us, in a way, our thoughts and our ideas. As long as we hold them tightly, they own us. And they turn us constantly. And we keep coming back over and over again to face it without ever finding a way to drop that clinging, to let open up the hand and let the thoughts go. Let them come and let them go. I mean, that's what they do, whether we do that or not, but we get caught up and entangled with them unless we're very clear and can see very clearly, watch it clearly, and allow it without being attached to it. So there's a third chapter called More Questions. So, so now he's talking about the transformation of the body. He identifies three kinds of bodies. One attained prior to the eighth stage, the barn full of junk stage, that realizes the nature of mind. One attained at the eighth stage that realizes the nature of dharmas, and one that realizes the nature of realization and is not associated with any stage, although it could be linked with any or all of the final three stages. But even the stages that we're talking about, it's all another idea. So these are ideas that are pointing us in a very particular direction, out of the trap that we often feel we're in as a person, which means a mask, basically. And so the ultimate Tathagata, which sounds very fancy, which means thus come, means anything that appears is, but it also means Tathagata, which means thus gone. So our lives are coming and going continually. And within all the things that we think and do, all of those are permeated with Buddha nature, which means our best self, our most kind, compassionate self. It's not something fancy and special. It's what's good. And not the good of being chastised for not being good, but the good that's already. So on 57, he talks about the projection body. There are three kinds of projection bodies. They are the body of experience of the bliss of samadhi, the body that realizes the essential nature of dharmas, and the body whose natural state is motionless. It's funny, isn't it? Once practitioners reach the first stage, they will obtain these three bodies as they progress. The projection body that experiences the bliss of samadhi is their myriad thoughts become still. Though they dwell in the ocean of the mind, the waves of consciousness cease. And they realize that whatever they perceive is nothing but their own mind and does not exist by itself. This is what is meant by the projection body that experiences the bliss of samadhi. So, the projection body that realizes the essential nature of dharmas is when those at the eighth stage contemplate and understand that all dharmas are illusory and devoid of anything real. They experience a transformation of mind and body and attain the samadhi of the illusory. To be willing to accept that in one sense it's all a dream. And while in this and other samadhis they are adorned with the powers and masteries and knowledge of limitless forms that unfold like flowers as fast as their thoughts. But like illusions or dreams or moonlight on the water or reflections in a mirror, they are not created of or by material elements, though they might seem to be. With their every limb thus adorned by all manner of attributes, they enter the Buddha assemblies of every land, where they become versed in the nature of dharmas. This is what is meant by the projection body that realizes the essential nature of dharmas. And then the last is the natural state in motionlessness. The realization that the characteristics of all the teachings of all the Buddhas are based on the bliss of personal attainment. This is what is meant by the projection body whose natural state is motionless. Mahamati, the contemplation and understanding of the characteristics of these three bodies, are something you should cultivate. And then he makes a little verse about it. My path is not a great path, nor is it instruction or words. Nor is it truth or liberation, nor is it a realm of nothingness. The path of the Mahayana includes the power of samadhi, different projection bodies, adornments of self-mastery. So that all by itself says what my teacher used to say, it's all up to you. We can study together and alone. We can sit for long hours. We can ask 1,000 questions of ourself and others. It's a wonderful lifetime work. But except for the help of others, the support and delight of being with others, it's really all up to us, what we do and how we do it. And that's the joy of it. And also a frustration as well. And so we seek out each other and find ourselves in Sangha in this way, because we are such a help to each other. So there's time for a little bit of time for questions. Samia?
I have a couple of questions for Leo.
Okay.
Just wondering, why do you think we do this, like we do? And also, what kind of things were happening in your head? What kind of things you were thinking about? And do you think it has like a reason why we do it, or do you think we're crazy, or we're okay?
I think there's a reason why we do it. It helps calm me down, and it's just very calming.
Uh-huh.
So that's the reason why I think you do it, because it calms your mind down.
And that's good. And what went through your head while you were sitting? And how did you do it so well?
Yeah,
what helped you?
Sat very good.
What helped you? Because it's a hard thing to do.
Well, I have to wait a lot at school, so it's really easy for me to wait here.
Yeah. It's very nice to have you in the school.
Thank you.
I told you'd be a guest speaker. Samia used to bring her daughter, too.
Really?
Yes, she did.
She used to fall asleep, too. And she'd sit here and look at the books and look at everyone just to entertain herself. And then when I get mad at her, she'd tell me, go sit.
Yeah, remember that, Leah.
Yeah, when Homer gets too excited, you just say, good sit. One of the very first quotes, if I heard it right, it was that it's not ever going to come up in our mind again. It was, I don't know if you read it off of the paper, or I'll have to go back to the book, I guess, but what came up for me, I thought it was one of the very first quotes, do you remember it, Ellie? And I latched onto it because you know, the mind, the way I understand it is our minds, well, my mind is always going. And what I have found, though, over time, certain thoughts will come up still. It's not like they go away. It's just that they don't have as much power over me, or I don't react to them, or I just let them go. But was this sutra suggesting, or was it metaphorically, it's just not ever going to come up? And that's how I took that quote from the very first beginning.
It says when the mind finally ceases.
Finally sees it.
There is no path or one who walks on it. So it's the mind that's making up somebody to be. Yeah.
Go away, that is because you recognize it.
You recognize that you're just making it up.
Yeah.
And so you can recognize those thoughts easily and just bow to them. Oh, here. There we are. You know, that's me. Oh, no, maybe it's not. Maybe it's just something I'm thinking about myself. I wonder what other people think about me. And if you really ask around, you find that everybody has a different idea about each one of us. You know, I'm an Oma, but I'm also a friend. I'm also a teacher. And those are just names for jobs. And who knows what's really? We really don't know quite who we are. Except in the most profound sense of just surrendering to the whole thing and letting it all function through us, or enacting as we are. That's the world. Anything else? Yeah.
Just a comment that I felt tonight how strongly the parts you were reading brought up the Tibetan Book of the Dead for me.
Mm.
The projections, the the different bodies, which I know the Tibetan Book of the Dead isn't really just for the people who are dead, it's for all of us.
Yes.
So much of it is about seeing our projections and allowing the, there's a line of the bliss, the samadhi of bliss and luminosity to arise.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing you read this tonight, it just seems so, it's so beautiful, really. Such, even as a something to hang on to, or as a concept to inspire us, that we could experience those different bodies in
yes.
our lifetime.
Yes. Yes. It's the process of us.
If we could just.
Just allow it. Yeah. Just let it be what it is. Yeah, it's. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's 8 o'clock. So, it's time.